You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. You've seen the pop-up taco spots, the people selling ice cream on beaches, the fruit carts selling on a hot summer day. But did you know most of those vendors are not operating legally? That's because even though the state of California said in 2018 you could sell on the sidewalk, they made the health code requirements so complicated, most people don't have permits. Well, those folks scored a big legislative win on Friday. Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill that modernizes the system and gives vendors a much clearer path to operating legally. In L.A., this news is welcomed by Merlin Alvarado, who sells bacon-wrapped hot dogs in Hollywood. 3 years ago, she says this felt impossible.
Porque éramos perseguidos por la policía, acosados. O sea, es algo que se salía de nuestra imaginación.
She says, because we were persecuted by the police, harassed, I mean, it's something out of our imagination. Well, Alvarado played an active role in the grassroots effort that shaped the legislation and helped make it a reality today. And KCRW's Megan Jamerson caught up with Alvarado and other supporters of this bill, and she joins us now to talk about it. Hi, Megan.
Hey, Steve.
So the law to legalize street vending in 2018 certainly wasn't perfect, requiring the fix that just passed and the governor signed. What wasn't working?
Well, simply, it just was so difficult for vendors like Alvarado to get health permits. And the main reason why is because in order to be eligible for permitting, the state required things that just don't make sense for food vendors.
All right. So, like, for instance, the specific requirements for food carts that don't make much sense, right?
Exactly. You're right. So when I spoke with Doug Smith, a staff attorney at the pro bono law firm Public Counsel. He represents a lot of sidewalk vendors, and he's one of the authors of this 2021 report done with UCLA. And the team there designed a sidewalk cart following the current guidelines, and it would weigh more than 1,200 pounds and be over 16 feet long.
Ooh, how do you even push a cart like that? 1,200 pounds?
Yeah, you can't. And it would also cost over 10 grand. So soon after the legislation arrived in 2018, Smith said that he started to hear from vendors themselves.
We worked with many, many vendors who came to us and said, listen, like, we've saved up, we're investing, we want this permit, we want to build a business. A lot of the vendors we work with, you know, dream of turning their food cart into a food truck and then their food truck into a brick and mortar restaurant.
And so when sidewalk vending became legal in 2018, the retail food code wasn't automatically updated. And this is really important. So you had sidewalk vendors trying to qualify for permits with rules meant for restaurants and food trucks. And according to UCLA, just in Los Angeles alone, there's around 10,000 food vendors, and only about 200 are permitted right now.
Wow, so a fraction. A lot of these folks are already vulnerable because many of them are also undocumented. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. They can be extorted. You know, one ticket for operating without a permit can just devastate their whole business and their livelihood. And according to UCLA, there's this one case in San Bernardino County where it escalated all the way to deportation.
And that led to SB 972. This was sponsored by State Senator Lena Gonzalez of Long Beach. How does this address all of those issues?
Well, the legislation itself does so much, including making those cart requirements more reasonable. It allows street vendors that sell fruit to slice their produce on their carts, and taco cart vendors, you know, to reheat their food. And then also vendors who need an extra commissary kitchen space for prep can now use places like churches and schools instead of having to find professional kitchen space. So overall, Smith says that this is just a huge win for vendors, but also, of course, the people that rely on this food and love this food. And maybe most importantly, it's welcoming these vendors into the formal economy. So, you know, folks like Alvarado say she will finally be able to do everything by the book, which is what she's always wanted to do. And this is going to affect her whole family.
Somos una mano de obra muy importante. Y que detrás de cada vendedor ambulante que hay en cada esquina, hay una familia que sobrevive de esa venta de tamales, de esa venta de hot dogs, de esa venta de frutas.
She says we are a very important workforce, and behind every street vendor on every corner, there is a family that survives from the sale of the tamales, from the sale of the hot dogs, and from the sale of the fruit. Smith also stressed that, you know, this is an example of when you're working on a policy, it's so important to include the people it will affect. And so, you know, street vendors are experts in their circumstances. So the advocates that were, you know, working on this campaign, they held monthly meetings with sidewalk vendors to write the bill together with them. And one of those vendors was Lynette Robinson. Robinson owns and operates her mobile shaved ice business in Rancho Cucamonga and Leimert Park. And her parents immigrated from South America, from Guyana. And the sweet ice she sells, she says it's a favorite childhood treat from there. She heard about the efforts to lobby for SB 972 this past spring. And she says, you know, her kids are grown and out of the house. And so she had this time to volunteer. So she dove right in, even though, you know, she had never done anything like this. And she actually made 3 trips to Sacramento to lobby and talk to legislators.
We'll show the working class and the low-income community.
She even spoke before the health committee this summer.
The ethics and dedication and grit that's sitting before you today, it's what feeds and sustains my livelihood.
She and other activists knocked on doors on senators' offices, trying to get them to vote for this bill. And she said, of course, that was nerve-wracking.
So every time there was a knock, it was like, who's coming out? You know, like it was a deep breath. You had to settle yourself. Butterflies fluttered. But by the time we got to like door 4 or 5, then the next day, by the time we got to like door 3 or 4, it's like, okay, I have the swing of this now.
And something else she said was really special about this experience was this solidarity that developed between the small group of vendors like herself who identify as Black and then the other vendors who were Hispanic and Latino. She said, you know, when they were up in Sacramento after they lobbied, they would hang out at the hotel and find ways to communicate with each other despite language barriers. And she just seemed really humbled by the whole experience.
I'm at a loss for words to explain how overwhelmingly awesome this feeling is. To be able to represent a group of people, I feel like the representation is not just Black, and it's not just woman, and it's not just street vendor. It's you know, all of the above.
And she says it was truly a worker-led movement.
Megan, does this mean a lot more people can get permits right away? I mean, what are the ramifications going forward?
Well, this should definitely open things up for these vendors, but the law goes into effect January 1st, and then it will be about a year until all the regulations are updated.
All right, KCRW's Megan Jamerson, who covers small business for us. Megan, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Just ahead, if you're looking for some fall and winter drought relief here in California, you may be looking for a lot longer. How La Niña is back again and playing rain spoiler in the long-range forecast. It's yours after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. It will be hot and dry this week. Thankfully, this weekend marks the unofficial beginning of the wet season in Southern California. Oh, but how wet will it be? If the long-range forecasts are right, not very wet. A triple-dip La Niña this winter is expected to keep Southern California drier than average for a third year in a row. La Niña is the sister and the alter ego to El Niño, and if in El Niño years more rain can fall in L.A., then in La Niña years it is quite the opposite. But why? And how rare is a third year in a row of La Niña? Eric Bolt is warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service serving Greater L.A. Eric, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Explain to me like I'm 5 years old what La Niña means in the meteorological world.
Well, I wish it was that simple, but I'll give it a shot. So La Nina is the cold phase of something we call the El Nino Southern Oscillation. And that is where we have a lot of cold water that upwells on the west coast of the Americas. So South America and even North America, this cold water comes up to the surface and it increases the winds along the tropics, which pushes a lot of the warmest seawater and the temperatures over to the Western Pacific Ocean. And that in turn steers the jet stream differently as storms approach the West Coast.
You said oscillation, and I told you I'm 5 years old. So, all right, steers the jet stream to a different place, right? And that means what, right. The storms stay north of Southern California or can veer in other places?
So what happens is that warmer ocean water in the Western Pacific is kind of the fuel for the storms. And that tends to bring that jet stream into the Western Pacific. And then it rides up over Alaska and into the Pacific Northwest. And we don't see as many storms tracking across California typically during a La Nina winter. So the Pacific Northwest up near Seattle, they'll be rather wet this winter in most cases. In Southern California, we tend to miss the storm. So this is a rare event to see 3 years in a row. There's only happened two other times since 1950.
What does that mean? I mean, does that climatologically, what is that? Does that mean the Earth? I mean, we know things are changing. There is climate change, you know, weather systems are different. There's more extreme weather, it seems, these days. Does that, I mean, is that just par for the course?
I think it is just par for the course. It's not that uncommon to see 2 years in a row of a La Nina or an El Nino. This one, though, is lasting 3 years. I don't think it means a whole lot out of the ordinary other than what we typically expect, which is a drier than normal winter. If we get into a fourth winter, I think that would be something that's just not ever seen in the record books since they've been measuring this since 1950. So that could be different, but right now, it just means probably a continuation of what we've seen the last 2 years. This below normal rainfall impacts to our drought continuing and worsening potentially this winter.
Tropical storms and hurricanes rarely make it close to California. But we saw Kay dump torrential rains on parts of Southern California, especially the Inland Empire and the deserts. How indicative is that of a changing climate, and did that rain help anything?
Well, it definitely helped where they saw the rain. It's just that many places closer to Los Angeles and northward didn't see much rain. So it maybe puts a temporary delay in the fire season that's coming up quickly on us now. So further south near the desert areas, some of those areas did see 4 or 5 inches of rain, which is excellent news. But it is very rare to see a hurricane actually make it that close to California, especially during a La Nina. You might expect that during an El Nino, when the ocean temperatures would even be much warmer, say closer to 80 degrees. But in this case, the ocean was too cold and it dissipated, but it still brought us some beneficial rain in places.
On top of all this, Santa Ana season starts as well in October. Those winds can be pretty fierce, and the fire danger becomes even more dangerous, right? I mean, what do you expect that to look like?
Right. That's a big question mark. La Nina tends, like we talked about, bring storms over the Pacific Northwest and into the Rockies, and we stay rather dry, but we typically see a lot of wind when that happens. So 2 years ago, I believe we had numerous Santa Anas. It was quite a season in October for Santa Ana events. So we need to be prepared for that. Our fire weather conditions, we know are the fuels out there. We talk about the vegetation being really dry. This is the time of year where it's at its driest. It's very critical, according to the fire agencies. So any fire start could happen rather quickly. And then if we fan it with a bunch of Santa Ana winds, and really dry, hot conditions, that can lead to some major fire. So we are getting into the thick of that as we get into October and even November if we don't see any significant rainfall during those 2 months.
All right. So drier, windier. And now let's talk about temperatures. It is no myth that average global temperatures are on the rise. How are we seeing this here in Southern California, in greater LA?
Well, you know, I give these outlooks every year about what's expected for the next several months over the wintertime. And for the last 22 years, basically every year this century, the forecast is the same. Above normal temperatures are likely to occur. So Southern California is no exception. Most of the West continues to see warmer temperatures every year. And in many cases, we set some record highs and record low temperatures for being really warm throughout the fall and into the winter months.
So drier, windier, and warmer. That's what we get from Eric Bolt, the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service, which, by the way, serves greater LA, but you guys are based up in Oxnard. Eric, thanks for coming on and talking to us.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Coming up, can you stay in office even after your city council term officially ends? 3 Mission Viejo test cases. Gustavo Arellano in the OC line straight ahead on the other side of this. Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. A major shift is about to happen at a city council down in Orange County. In just 4 days, a trio of Mission Viejo City Council members are getting the boot. They're being forced to step down for improperly extending their term limits. That is, unless an appeals court steps in the meantime. Will the city lose the majority of their city council in just a few days? Gustavo Arellano is here to explain, columnist, of course, for the LA Times, and one of our regulars, of course, here at GLA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
All right, so Wendy Bucknam, who is the mayor, and Councilmen Greg Raths and Ed Sachs were elected to 2-year terms 4 years ago, but they're still there. What's going on? Why are they being removed from their seats now, only now?
Okay, so this is a long saga that goes with a bigger trend in Orange County, which is lawsuits or threatened lawsuits about having district representation in city council races and other races, idea being that there's not enough minority representation. So Mission Viejo got threatened with one, gosh, I think back in 2016. So in 2018, they said, okay, we don't want to do district elections, but we're going to try something new called cumulative voting, which basically if, say, there's 3 open council seats, every voter gets 3 votes, and they could put them all for one candidate or spread them around. And so an Orange County Superior Court judge said, okay, that's perfectly fine. Mission Viejo goes to the California Secretary of State at the time, Alex Padilla, who's now, of course, the U.S. Senator. He said, no city in California has that. You can't do that. So Mission Viejo then said, okay, fine, we'll do district elections in 2022. But in the meanwhile, these 3 council members who are voted for two-year elections, the city council in 2020 voted unanimously, well, they could serve 2 other years. Who is it going to hurt?
All right. Well, a resident from Mission Viejo was not cool with that whatsoever. A guy named Michael Schlesinger, right, who sued for extending their term limits, and he won that lawsuit, right?
Yeah, he said it was illegal. He said that the voters should be deciding if they want to extend the terms of these council members who were only supposed to be on for 2 years. By the way, this is really interesting. Those council members on whose future were being decided back in 2020, they themselves voted on their own futures. Usually I would think it's a conflict of interest, but obviously not in Mission Viejo. A judge agreed. A judge said, yeah, you could appeal, but if there's not going to be an appeal within 30 days, so this is at the very beginning of September, maybe late August, you 3 council members and the mayor, the 2 council members and the mayor, you'll be out of office.
And no appeal yet, right? That's what the OC judge said. Is that still perhaps a possibility by the end of the week or no?
Yeah, they have until the end of the week to decide. I mean, you know, these council members, they do not want to have it on their political record that they got booted out of office for doing something that a judge found illegal. So I'm almost certain there's going to be an appeal.
What are they saying on their behalf? I mean, did they mean to overstay their welcome? I mean, they obviously, you said they didn't recuse themselves, right, when they were making the vote. Did they do this by accident? I mean, you sort of gave us a story, but What are they saying?
Yeah, the argument that they're making was that since there wasn't anything changed to the voting process of Mission Viejo, in other words, because they were still doing general elections as opposed to district elections or cumulative voting, that they could just continue because things hadn't changed. Like, if it was a really weird and bizarre argument that, again, the city council at the time said, okay, sure, fine, go with it. And it took Schlesinger to say no, like, you know, alleging that what they did was absolutely illegal.
What do you think is going to happen in this case? So you don't think an appeal is going to come down, but they may try and do it later?
No. I think they're going to file an appeal by the end of the week. Again, they don't want to have this stain on their record. But it's moot because let's say those three council members are out of office. Well, now you're going to have to run people for those open seats in November, for the November election, which is now, 6 weeks away. So those people will still probably run. Like, it's like, okay, we'll kick you out, put that stain. By the way, you could still run because they're not, as far as I know, there wouldn't be any other penalties other than you weren't supposed to be on for those 2 years. So you can't be on for the remaining 6 weeks of your term.
But barring that appeal, right before the end of the week, they go. And can the city council continue to function with three fewer members? I mean, that leaves the council with just two members left, right?
Mission Viejo has great food, but otherwise a very boring city. But now they're going to have an interesting experiment in democracy with two council members. And so that's actually what they're discussing this week, is like, how can we give more power to the city manager, at least for the next 6 weeks, until we're all right and straight with what's supposed to be our city, our city council, which is you're supposed to have a full city council, not where it's just two people and also the mayor out. Like, that's, I've never heard of a case like this ever in my many, many years or centuries covering Orange County.
Well, you haven't been here that long, Gustavo. But let's say that they do get booted, there's no appeal, and they're done. Then the election comes in November, they run again. They can take over immediately right after the election?
Yeah, cue The Entertainer by Scott Joplin. That's how much of a fun ride what we're seeing in Mission Viejo. Because, yeah, it's like, imagine that. You have a judge says, okay, you were in office illegally, out 6 weeks later telling the voters, hey, remember how I was on office these 2 years? I wasn't supposed to. Well, the city ran pretty good, right? Vote for me again. And, hey, that's good electioneering in South Orange County.
I'll get the popcorn. Gustavo Arellano, columnist at the LA Times, our regular here at GLA. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, tens of thousands of people are hoping to be recipients of Section 8 vouchers, but with way fewer slots than people who actually want them, a lottery is the only hope for some folks to get rent relief. Who's even taking these vouchers these days? We're going to talk about it tomorrow on Greater LA. Check us out anytime online at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us what's on your mind. Share a story idea with us. What would you like to hear about Greater LA on this program? Well, that's at kcrw.com/GLA. And of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all helped shape this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time and your ears. Have a great night.